Hi, my name is Emily Erickson. I am a graduate student in the Grossinger Lab at the Pennsylvania State University. And today I will be talking about my thesis research, which is looking at pollinator attraction to ornamental plants, as well as covering some guidelines for planting gardens for pollinators. So it's widely understood that pollinator populations are experiencing global declines. This is due to a number of interacting factors, including climate change, parasites and pathogens, pesticide exposure, and a loss of foraging resources due to human land use. While it is well understood that natural areas are vital for conserving diverse pollinator communities, there has been a recent increase in research on the potential for human-managed green spaces to support pollinator populations. While we know that many of these developed landscapes support a limited community of pollinators, evidence shows that gardens and parks can be valuable sites for providing foraging resources to these urban pollinator communities, due to their reported relatively low pesticide use, complex landscapes, and protected environments. In light of this information, there has been an impressive effort by home gardeners and landscaping professionals to mitigate pollinator declines by planting pollinator-friendly habitat in these managed urban green spaces. Despite the public demand for pollinator-friendly plant material, there is relatively little reliable information on which common garden plants are best for pollinators, and what does exist is often not regionally specific and does not accurately encapsulate the overwhelming number of cultivars available on the market. When planting for pollinators, there are a few well-established guidelines that home gardeners can follow to increase their likelihood of creating ecologically valuable habitat. Native plants have co-evolved with our native pollinators, and so they are the best bet for choosing plants that a diverse group of pollinators will use. As a bonus, they are adapted to the landscape, so will require much less maintenance. Unfortunately, native plants are not always easy to come by, and those at the larger garden centers are often cultivated ornamental versions, sometimes called nativars, that may not be as attractive to pollinators. The good news is, many ornamental native and non-native perennial plants have been cultivated for a much shorter time as compared to ornamental annuals, and they may provide a much higher amount of nutritional rewards. When choosing cultivated varieties for pollinators, avoid doubled flowers or those that look very different from the wild types of the species, as these may have lost their signal or utility to pollinators. Regardless of what you choose to plant, make sure that you select a diversity of flower species and forms with overlapping bloom times to ensure that you are providing season-long foraging resources. Many herbaceous plants available at garden centers bloom mid to late summer, and flowering woodies can be a great foraging resource for the early spring bees. Once you've planted your garden, make sure to limit your backyard pesticide application. Pesticides, not just insecticides, can end up in the pollen and nectar of pollinator plants and can have both lethal and sublethal effects on visiting insects. To reduce your risk of exposing pollinators and other beneficial insects to harmful chemicals, minimize your use of chemical control and opt for biological and cultural controls for managing pest outbreaks. If you must use a pesticide in your garden, including on plants not planted specifically for pollinators, avoid spraying during daylight hours when most pollinators are most active, and don't spray plants that are in full bloom. Always read the label before applying a pesticide for information on how to minimize risk to beneficial insects. Finally, make sure you leave room for habitat in your garden. Many bee species nest underground or in hollow stems or cavities. Leaving some bare ground around your garden can encourage ground nesting bees. Additionally, bees will spend the winter in their stem or ground nests, and many other beneficial organisms live in leaf litter. Hold off on clearing this debris from your yard until springtime, when things begin to emerge again. For more great information on how to manage a garden for pollinators, check out online resources such as Pollinator Partnership and the Xerces Society, which have regional native plant guides and detailed information and gardening advice. So, considering what we know to be good practices for supporting pollinators, there is actually a problem with how these concepts are generally applied in our own backyards. The problem is that many of the plants commonly planted in managed spaces like gardens and parks in urban and suburban areas are annual ornamental plant species. This is based on our cultural preferences, inventory availability, and the comparative lower price point to perennial and native plants. And these plants are distinct because they've been cultivated, some for centuries, with human preference as the main selection pressure. This is significant because we know that particular floral traits, such as color, shape, reward, and bloom time, are important signals to pollinators and are likely a result of a long coevolutionary mutualistic relationship. In cultivated plants, where these behaviorally significant traits are all over the place within a single genus, just take a look at the picture of these zinnias here for reference, the attractiveness, accessibility, or utility of these plants to pollinators may be altered. Despite the fact that ornamental plants are so widely used in residential and commercial landscaping, there are very few studies on how they may support pollinators. And to date, those that have been published have been done in urban and suburban areas. And this last point is an important one, because we know that urbanization often has a filtering effect on biodiversity and community composition. Complex pollinator communities are composed of dietary specialists that only collect resources, often pollen, from one or a few plant taxa, and generalists, who are able to collect resources from many different plant species. However, cities can be difficult environments for specialized species or species that nest in the ground, as they have a high degree of patchy, disturbed habitat, unique climatic conditions, and many non-native and ornamental plant species. Nestedness is an important property in plant pollinator networks, whereby the species that interact with the least amount of things, or are specialized, interact with the more generalized species in an asymmetric fashion. For example, in the left-hand figure, each black box represents an interaction between plant and pollinator. See how a pollinator, in the bottom left of the figure, only interacts with a single plant species. But the plant that they interact with is visited by many other pollinators in the system. Similarly, a pollinator in the top left interacts with many plants in the system, or is a generalist, including plants for which it is the sole pollinator. This structure is characteristic of diverse natural systems and confers stability against environmental disturbances. In urban areas, however, we don't have nearly as many specialist species, and so the network structure looks much more random and generalized, such as the one on the right, and is markedly less stable. Successful pollinator restoration efforts should focus on repairing ecological function rather than focusing on individual species conservation. With this in mind, we need to understand how ornamental plants fit into complex pollinator communities to understand what their function is in terms of community restoration. So, in addition to observing how they interact with pollinators in the unique urban habitats that they are commonly planted in, it is also important to observe their function in a diverse semi-natural habitat. If you go to any garden center, you will become quickly aware of how many species and varieties of ornamental plants are available for purchase. For this study, we sought to distill the wide selection of plants into a subset of common plants for the northeastern United States region. We started with a 2014 NASS grower survey on the top grossing ornamental plants in the U.S. We then did an additional Pennsylvania grower survey and then cross-referenced these selections with a plant breeding professional and one of our co-authors, Sinclair Adam. From there, we selected 5 plant genera that were commercially significant and common in Pennsylvania. These were marigolds, zinnias, sweet alyssum, also called lobularia, lantana, and pentas, also called star cluster. We aimed to choose genera that represented a range of floral characteristics, especially among cultivars, so we could begin to explore the question of floral trait manipulation and pollinator attraction. When possible, cultivars were chosen within series, a series being a group of cultivars, in theory from the same lineage, that differ from each other in one or a few characters, generally color, size, or stature. We observed these plants at 2 semi-natural field sites in central Pennsylvania. Both were on a forest edge habitat that had been previously surveyed and published in Russo et al. 2013, and was determined to be host to a complex community of plants and pollinators. These sites were only about a kilometer apart from one another, so while their pollinator communities should be mostly independent from one another, they would have experienced comparable climate and other environmental factors. Additionally, all plants were placed in pots above the ground and planted in the same media to control for variation based on soil characteristics. Plots were arranged in a random complete block design with one representative of each cultivar per block and 4 blocks per plot. Plants were observed in sets of 4 for 10 minutes at a time. The order of observations was randomized weekly. To account for daily variation in activity, there was a morning and afternoon observation for each individual plant at each site per week. Observations ran from the beginning of bloom in July to the end of September. We did 2 additional collections of all of the visitors on the plants in 2017 and identified the bees in these samples to species. Every other week, bee bowls in 2 sets of 3 and vein traps on either side of the field were set for 24 hours, and the insects collected were processed and identified at the end of the season. Additionally, we know that the size of the floral display has a strong effect on the attractiveness of the plant. So, we collected weekly floral area measures for each plant and used these to standardize our analyses. So these are the results based on the estimated marginal means extracted from a mixed effects model with the abundance of all visitors, the abundance of visitors within a functional group, and the diversity as response variables. The letters denote statistical significance. Each bar is a cultivar, and each color group is a genus. Looking first at abundance on the far right, we see that there is impressive variation in the overall number of visitors that some cultivars attract within genera, such as the lobularia, and very little variation in others, such as in the lantana. This is really interesting because it shows that for some plant taxa, the cultivar selection matters quite a bit, but not as much for others. Of course, we would need to do an in-depth analysis of the floral, visual, and nutritional traits of these varieties to determine why this may be, but it illustrates the complexity of plant-pollinator interactions and the difficulties of generalizing conclusions across such a diverse group of plants. It is important to acknowledge that, apart from the lobularia cultivars, all cultivars were poorly attractive as compared to observations from other studies that have been published on native and perennial plants. Looking next to the proportional abundance of visitors that were bees in light gray, flies in medium gray, and butterflies in dark gray, we also see some interesting patterns. We see that all plants attract at least two taxonomic groups to a significant degree. However, they all have a dominant taxa that seems to be relatively well conserved within the plant genera, despite variation between cultivars. This tells us that although certain pollinators seem to prefer particular plant taxa, as has been suggested by well-established pollination ecology theory, all of these plants are quite generalized. This is further reinforced by the diversity measures on the far left, which are commonly used to infer a species' functional role in a pollination network. We see very little variability in the diversity of the visitors that the varieties attract, which again illustrates that they are similarly generalized. The story gets a bit more interesting when you compare the bees collected on the study plants with those collected in the traps that were present in the surrounding landscape. The bees from the collections were expertly identified to species by Sam Droege of the USGS and then classified based on dietary specialization using the supplementary data from Bartomius et al. 2013. Polylectic bees are those that collect pollen from a range of species and are considered generalists. Oligolectic species are those that are much more specialized in their pollen collection habits. We found that, as expected, there were both specialist and generalist species in the background population. However, we only observed generalized species visiting the study plants. Considering what we know about network stability and nestedness, this means that these annual ornamental plants play a very special role in a community as generalized plants only supporting generalists. This is an important detail to consider when developing pollinator habitat for supporting communities. Additionally, we looked at how the attractiveness of cultivars based on mean abundance of visitors varied based on which site they were in. Remember, planting media and climate were consistent between sites, and so the main difference between the sites is in the ecological communities, including background plants and pollinators. The asterisks indicate those means that were significantly different from one another based on a Tukey post hoc test. We see here that for some genera, such as the Lantana, the background community does not seem to impact the overall attractiveness of the plant, despite the fact that we observed very different species foraging on these varieties at either site. Alternatively, other cultivars did significantly vary in attractiveness based on site, and not always in a predictable pattern within genera. This suggests that for some species, the attractiveness of the plants is context-dependent. Certainly, to draw any conclusions about ecological stability, we would need to test many more plants in many more sites. But this is a starting point for forming further hypotheses about how these plants function in their environments. Finally, we looked at the correlation of floral display area in the bottom graphs and the abundance of visitors in the top graphs. As expected, based on the literature, floral display area and visitor abundance are closely related to one another. This is significant to consider since both floral display area and increased bloom size are traits that are commonly selected for in ornamental plants and may influence their utility to pollinators. Additionally, this figure illustrates how long the plants in the study are in bloom for, which is another trait that is often selected for. This prolonged bloom duration may mean that ornamental plants can provide forage during the natural dearth periods and serve as a stepping stone between the bloom times of more attractive flower species. So, in conclusion, we find that annual ornamental plants, even in a semi-natural setting with many other foraging resources available, attract some but not many visitors, and that there is a marked variation in the overall attractiveness of particular cultivars within some genera, but not in others. We predict that this is related to variation in floral traits, and we are currently testing these hypotheses in controlled experiments. Additionally, we found that the abundance of visitors that these plants attracted varied based on time of year and site, which reinforces that any evaluation of plant attractiveness to pollinators should account for seasonal, daily, and site variation. Finally, we observed that ornamental plants in a semi-natural setting are themselves highly generalized, yet only attract generalist bee species. This indicates that in terms of supporting a complex pollinator community, these plants will likely be insufficient alone. So the ecological value of annual ornamental plants for supporting pollinator populations depends on the context in which they're being used and the specific conservation goals for that managed habitat. In an urban environment dominated by generalist pollinator species, particularly attractive annual ornamental plants may be useful in providing long-blooming foraging resources to supplement native and perennial plantings for these core pollinator groups. If you're looking for more information on pollinators and supporting pollinators in urban gardens and in urban habitats, these are the references used for this presentation. This project was done with the support of Pennsylvania State University and the Penn State Center for Pollinator Research, with funding from the USDA, Pollinator Partnership, the American Honey Producers Association, the Sigma Xi Grant in Aid of Research, the National Science Foundation, American Hort, Horticultural Research Institute, and the IR4 Project. Thank you to Siddhartha Corallo and Rachel Kanashiki for field assistance, Sam Drogi for expertly identifying my bees, Joseph M. Salee for consultation on soil characteristics at the field sites, Austin Kurt for helping to implement all elements of this field research, and Anthony Vaujo for advising the field component of this project. And finally, this research is in collaboration with the SCRI research project across many institutions and labs that is investigating how ornamental plants may support pollinator populations. Thank you for your attention, and please feel free to contact me if you have any questions about this research.